very practical, inspirational approach to writing and photography. And there are a lot of markets that I think we fail to even consider, and we should be considering. And he gives you the practical look on what's possible. So I'm really glad that he's here today, rather than to tell you more about him, which you could learn on his own site and our site as well. Here's Michael, and before, maybe at the same time, Carolyn has something for Michael to honor this wonderful gentleman, scribe.
Again, on behalf of BCATW, it is my pleasure to present Michael with an honorary lifetime membership, which actually I think he was given a couple of years ago, but never really had the press card.
So, it's now official.
Now it's clarified. That's great. I hope you use that one. Getting more of the bite out of your writing.
I had everything ready, but then I put my computer to sleep and it overslept. So I'm just
a teenager.
Yeah, I'm just booting it up right now, and we should be ready to go.
Who's blocking the screen?
Before I start, let me just say I belong to a number of other travel writer organizations, and TMAC and SATW, and one of the things that I find is, number one, they're very Ontario-centric, because that's where the bulk of their members come from. So we in the West tend to get forgotten about. And it's good that we have an organization in BC that can cater to the development of new and improving the skills of the veteran writers here in BC, because I don't think some of the other two organizations that I belong to do that great of a job of taking care of BC people. So it's good that we have to take care of ourselves. And I'm just looking at this meeting, and there's more people here than was at the last TMAC meeting. So I think that's a good thing. Okay, what we're going to talk about today is all of those markets that Rick says we're missing out on, which he's probably right. Did it work? No, it didn't work. Let's try that again. See, I don't have the magic wand, so I have to do something here. Okay. Be very careful with this. One of the things we do as travel writers is that we travel, and I used to travel with a lot of travel writers on press trips. I tend to do solo trips by myself now, because press trips are good, but they try to cover such a broad spectrum that it really doesn't, nobody gets enough out of it to really make an impact on the kind of story that they can write. So my typical mode of operation is I'll pitch a story idea to an editor, he likes it, gives me an assignment. I then contact the people I need to contact at the destination, and I get them to do an itinerary that I set up. So, but I still do the odd press trip when it's to a destination that I want to sort of do some, reconnaissance on, first impressions, so that I can see whether or not it fits the bill for my future work. And one of the things that I noticed is that with the writers that I travel with, we'd be at an airport. Let's say we have to stop at an airport in some country for 2 hours to catch a flight to another country. And they're either doing nothing, or they're at the duty-free shop, or blogging, or doing some crazy thing. Or drinking. I'm in the newsstand of every country I go into at the airport. and I'm going through every magazine I can find on the newsstand that covers travel. If I find a travel article in a magazine, I quickly go to the masthead, I take out my pencil and my pad, and I write down the website address, the editors, as a couple of editors' names, like the assistant editors, and hopefully they've had an email listed. I do that wherever I go. When I get to the destination, I always set aside a couple hours to go into a store, a newspaper stand or whatever, and examine the literature on these sites. We're missing out a lot of publications in the world. This is no longer a BC market that we're in, or a Canadian market, or a North American market. It's a world market. Gone are the days of the international reply coupon, which you have to go to the post office to buy just to get an editor to return your query to you, okay? I mean, nowadays, finding a magazine in a foreign country is as easy as going to the newsstand at an international airport or at a destination, or simply going on the web and instead of spending the time in the duty-free shop or in the bar, just do some research on the web for magazines all over the world. I keep hearing about the demise of print. I had an argument with somebody on the TMAC listserv about 10 years ago about that. Since then, travel pages have grown by about 20 to 30%. Not as much as they had in the previous 10 years to that, but they're still growing, and there's new publications coming out all the time. Also, all of the print publications are now launching web publications, and the web versions of these magazines are slightly different. And there's more work, okay? And we're missing the boat because we're just thinking, most of us, not myself, but there's a lot of travel writers that think of travel writing in terms of newspapers. And newspapers are definitely going the way of the dodo bird. They're only suited for a certain time in the morning when you're in a certain room and you need something to read. And putting a laptop on your lap just doesn't seem to have the same tactile feeling, okay, as newsprint. But literally, they're becoming less and less a part of the daily life, though the big dailies are still healthy and are still making money. But the world outside of North America is still largely print, okay? Well over half of the world's population doesn't have a cell phone, don't have a computer, and they still rely on print for their daily information. The emerging countries, print is still huge. China, 1 billion people, and print is large, predominantly the media, okay? For a number of reasons, and that one of the reasons is that the Chinese government keeps the web pretty well tightly sewed up. So if you print becomes a major function in their daily life. But my problem is to get travel writers to resell stuff that they've already written. One of the problems with doing that with writing for newspapers is that they want the full copyright. I say to those writers, move up to magazines, because the vast majority of magazines are still first North American serial rights. The worst case scenario is that they'll want non-exclusive rights, okay, which means they have the right to use your story any way they want, but you keep the copyright, which means you can resell them yourself. You need to get up to that level where you're not giving away your copyright, because once you do, then you can resell that story many, 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 many times. I've resold stories 12 or 14 times. I was just telling someone that I just sold a story, one story I did called Don't Step on the Iguanas, about a Galapagos trip, has sold about a dozen times for about $8,000 total over the last, say, 8 years. So, and that was from the first original. And it takes very little time, as I'll show you, to resell your stuff. Foreign magazines pay less than North American magazines, but their pay rate is still higher than North American newspapers, okay? You never send a story as an attachment. If you are going to send a story to a foreign market, especially a foreign newspaper, just include the story in the body of the email. Never send it as an attachment. And never send an attached story to a magazine, a foreign magazine. Query them and send them links to samples, but don't send any attachments, because chances are almost 100% that any email that arrives on a foreign editor's email box with an attachment is going to be deleted without even reading it. Okay, and that's happening in North America too.
Why is that?
Security reasons, a lot of hacking going on. And not only that, but editors just, they don't have the time.
Excuse me, it's usually viruses if you're using a PC.
Yeah, I mean, it's, a lot of the publishing industry in North America, about 70% is Mac, and it's still okay. But internationally, it's all PC.
Yeah.
And they're definitely not going to open up any attachment. Okay? And not only that, but if you don't grab the editor's attention in the subject line, you're going to get deleted anyway. So you got to grab them in the subject line. So we'll just go through this. And I never query the top dog in any magazine, whether it's in the United States or Hong Kong or Beijing. I pick somebody down the masthead and I work on them. It's a lot easier to slip in through the gatekeeper than to go right to the king and ask to be let in. Because a lot of these magazines in North America and foreign magazines, the gatekeepers are usually the assistant editors, the senior editors, the managing editors. Don't go to the editor or the editor-in-chief on your pitches. Start with somebody low down and work your way up. Now, they might say, oh, just send it directly to the editor. Well, then that's okay, because then in your next email to the editor, you could say, blah, 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 told me to send you this email. So it even works, because that breeds a little bit more familiarity with you and the publication and that editor. So start with somebody lower on the masthead. And even if you have to address, like they give you in the writer's guidelines, which I'll show you later, if they say just send it to editor or info at and the magazine's name, still address your query to a particular person. Chances are, if it's got a general address, email address, the editor's not opening it. It's somebody down the chain. Okay, so it's best to pick one of those people in the first place, because it makes all the difference when that person opens up that email and it's hi or hello, to whom it may concern and all of this, and he or she is actually reading their own name. It just has more of an impact. So try and put the person's name down. Yeah?
Maybe this is a dumb question, but are these all English language publications that you're submitting to?
We'll get to that, but I'll just briefly mention that, like finance and like aviation, when it comes to the publishing business, the international language is English, and it's becoming more so all the time. And you will find English language publications in almost every single country in this world today. Because in every single country of this world, there are expatriates, English-speaking expatriates living. Saudi Arabia, all of the Arab countries have English daily newspapers and English magazines. Okay? Hong Kong has 3 or 4 or 5 English published magazines that take travel. That's just Hong Kong. Singapore. I mean, it's endless.
Oh, okay.
But having said that, you have the right idea, and you're querying Geo in Germany, which publishes only in German, and he likes your idea. You submit your story in English, they do the translation. Okay, so we'll talk about that later. The biggest reason for failure, and this is not only on foreign markets, but this is also for international markets and definitely for American markets. The queries are too long. I do a query workshop and I see queries at 400 and 500 words, and they're pitching the editor to do a short department piece of 600 words. So what do you think the editor's impression of that writer is? First of all, the editor wouldn't read an email that long. I tend to keep my queries at about 100 to 150 words, no more. If you can't convince the editor in the first two sentences that you've got a great idea, five more sentences, it's not going to do it.
That 150 words is basically the gist of the story, or is that?
That's the whole thing.
That's like I am and.
Yeah, the first paragraph is the grabber. Then the second paragraph is how it would benefit the magazine to have the story run. The third paragraph is a short blurb about yourself and why you're the person to do the story. And then you end with a sentence that, hope to hear from you soon kind of thing. That whole thing is 150 words. So you have to grab them in the subject line, no more than four words in the subject line. Does anybody know why you should have no more than four words in your subject line?
Yes. No, because the first Google can only pick up the first four words.
There's a lot of reasons, but let's hear one. First of all, Google only picks up the first four words. Secondly, most editors are on a 23 to 24 inch monitor. Some, if they're lucky and their magazine has sprung for it, they might be on a 26 monitor. But they never set up their email program to span the whole 23, 24 inches. The emails are about, say, 12 to 14 inches wide. By the time you put in all of the other columns, the inbox column where the subject appears, that column width on their email inbox is usually about 4 or 5 words long. So what happens when you put the subject in there that's 10 words, you're going to get first four words and then dot, dot, dot. And it's not going to make any sense to the editor. Delete key. Gone. No more than four words in the subject line. You key him on the subject line. That convinces him that he needs to, or she needs to, open up the email. Once they open up the email, you have two sentences. That's it. Two sentences to sell them on that idea. If you don't sell them on the idea in two sentences, 400 or 500 words, you're just wasting your time. They're not going to read that part.
In the subject line, are the first two words editorial query or query?
No. Well, I've got an actual slide on that, so let's just...
Oh, okay. Proceed.
We talked about this. Always email your query. The days of stamps. How do you get that? Self-addressed stamp envelope. And
The Alaskan Airline magazine still requires that.
Yeah, some magazines, they still do it for new queries on new writers. But us, the older, the ones that they've already written for them, they'll allow you to send emails. So there are a few that still want the snail mail. But here's the thing. I never, even when I send to those magazines, I never put in a self-addressed stamped envelope. The reason being is very simple. There is absolutely no way an editor that loves your idea is not going to just email you. He's not going to stuff your query with a note on it back into an envelope and put it in his outbox to go out in the mail. It's not going to happen. He's either going to phone you or he's going to email you. So you send your query by snail mail, but don't put a self-addressed stamped envelope in it, because if he likes your idea, he'll be in touch with you. If he doesn't like your idea, your self-addressed stamped envelope is just going to come back and say, no thanks. So you just wasted that money. So you don't need to worry about that. You have to make sure for every market, especially the foreign markets, you have to pay special attention to seasonality. Okay? you can't be pitching. You have to remember that when we're in summer, the southern hemisphere is in winter. So if you're pitching a story to a Japanese magazine about skiing in Chile, you have to pitch that in our winter so that it could meet their winter the next summer. So you have to think in reverse. You have to, seasonality is very important and timely. And it gets a little bit more complicated internationally because that you'll sell foreign publications are south of the equator. So they have their seasons completely reversed, okay? So they're running stories in their summer that are applicable to winter in Canada to visit winter in Canada and vice versa. So you have to be conscious of that. Put the grabber title no more than four words. Never put anything like freelance or contributor in the email. Don't. I mean, that's the easy. The editor's just waiting there on the delete key. And the minute he sees editorial submission, freelance submission, contribution, anything like that, that delete key gets pressed. Okay? Unless their guidelines specifically say to submit with that, those specific words in the subject box, you never put them. Put the grabber, four-word grabber.
So you wouldn't proceed that with query?
No.
Times
the editor has to, you have to trick the editor into opening up your email. Okay? This is trick or treat, kids. This is nothing to do with the common sense. I was telling this to Rick, was that you I was telling? Who was that? I was saying, magazines especially, they will get anywhere, top tier magazines in North America get anywhere between 200 and 300 pitches a day. Editor has a chance to read, and the assistant editor and senior editor maybe 20 of those. Where do you want to be? Okay? If you put freelance or contributor or query in your subject line, you're already deleted. Grabber, four words, grabber, and make the editor want to open up your email.
Can you give us an example?
Well, I use don't step on the iguanas, and I've used it. The reason it's five words, but because a couple of them are small, I actually tried it out, and I even asked editors after the fact,
right.
And I emailed it out to a bunch of my friends who have 23, 24 inch monitors, as if they were editors, and asked them how does it show up in your email, and they said they could see the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. Now, if I'm an editor and I see query, story query, or freelance submission, and I see don't step on the iguanas. Come on, I mean, I've got 150 emails that I to open up. Which one am I going to open up? Which one piques my interest? Not query.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean about grabbing the editor's attention. If you don't grab that editor's attention, the delete key.
So you wouldn't just put the name of the destination then?
No.
Nothing. Don't step on the iguanas. You got to make him open up that email. You have to earn the right to advance. That's the old sales tactics. You earn the right to advance by having him open up the email. Once he's opened up the email, you've earned the right to advance. The advance is the first two sentences of your email. Okay?
Thank you.
You then have to earn the right to advance after those two sentences. Okay? Those have to grab him enough for him to read why that story should be written for his readers, and why you're the best person to do that story. Okay? Every one of those paragraphs, you earn the right to advance to the next paragraph until the editor hits reply in the email and says, I love your idea, or hits the delete. Okay? So you have to figure that he's only going to read one sentence at a time, and it's got to hook him to get to the next sentence, and then finally your sign off. Yeah.
But in the email, do you tell them before?
No.
Never.
No. No. At the very bottom, why you're the one to do it, you could say something like, I've spent extensive time researching this, blah, blah, blah. You know, some people say about winning awards, and I'll talk about that later. I don't normally say that, but I will say something like, to view a more detailed bio, and I'll put a link to a sample. If he makes it that far, I put a link to a couple of samples on my website, and he will go and get the links. Again, you have to remember here, you have to ration yourself. These guys have so much emails to go through every day, you've got to ration yourself, okay? What else, the sample clips.
Yeah, the women can read better, though.
Sample clips are okay. Like, for the U.S., you definitely have to provide sample clips. And when I say sample clips, I don't mean sending attachments. If you don't have a website, you're out of this business today. Okay? You're out of this business. Because now editors don't want anything cluttering up their inbox, especially attachments. If you don't have a link to your published work, you're not going to get it. Sorry. It could be on another site. As long as you have a link to show your work somewhere, that's fine. But I would highly recommend, if you want to make a business out of this, you have to get some website, and you have to put some samples of your work on that website. Okay? Basically, email, in a lot of cases, you don't want to send too many samples, because in some foreign markets, the person that will be opening up the emails has a limited grasp of the English language. They'll be lower down on the totem pole, and sometimes they're just not going to be able to handle a whole story to decide whether. I mean, the query is your whole thing.
What do you think of translating your article?
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. It's not really necessary, but yeah.
Michael, are you talking about sample clips in your initial query?
No. Well, sample clips are important, but it's how you present them. I don't like, I would definitely recommend that you not send sample clips with your query as an email attachment. Put them as a hot link in the body of the email right after you say why you're the best person, right after that sentence, why you've made your case, why you're the person to do this story. Then if you can say, I normally say, you know, I'm the best person to do this story because, and if you need more detailed information, please visit my website, and I give him I'll either give him my web link right there, or I'll also give him a couple of clips that he can, and it'll say sample on it, on the link.
When you're featuring your clips on your website, are they in PDF form or pages like?
I don't use PDF because then people can cut and paste into there and steal stuff. I use a JPEG format, and I layer all my pages together, so there's no way for them to literally lift something off my website. They have to hand type it out every word. Okay, if you put PDFs on a website, it's a complicated procedure to get so that nobody can highlight it, cut and paste, just pull it off your website. If you put JPEGs, they can't do that.
So a JPEG is
a scan of a page, and then I link them all together in one image, page after page. I can show you later on how that's done. But anyway, don't send samples, send links, okay? And the link should come after you've made your case for writing the story. Now, very important, even more important in foreign markets, but as important nowadays. I think the last time I gave a thing about photography, wasn't it, Rick? About why writers need to do. Look, if you're a writer today and you can't take a decent photo, you're going to be a dinosaur very quickly, okay? Writers have to learn to take pictures. They just have to. It means survival. If you're not capable of taking a picture now, then take courses. Learn to use a camera. And I think we're moving away from still photography and gradually getting into video, because a lot of the on-site magazines now, for the print magazines, the on-site versions all have video clips on them, 15 to 30 second video clips. Becoming more and more. If you do blog work, any image is better than no image. You've got to learn photography. Foreign markets don't have the staff, they don't have the money, they don't have the resources like North American publications do to go out and research a whole bunch of photography. They're going to buy a package. You're going to sell a package to them. If you have photos, you've doubled the chance of your... you double the chance of a sale.
So just on the point of the photos, it is shocking how many people do not understand what high-res is. And they send an image that looks high-res on their computer because it fills the screen. They think, oh, it's a big photo. And in fact, for a magazine, it ends up being a very small one when it's printed. There's a very big difference between what you see on your screen and what we're going to print in the magazine. For me to print a color image in a magazine, if I want to give it a good spread, if it's a good photo, I might be putting it across literally 16 inches wide. So you're talking about tens of thousands of pixels wide. You have to understand this if you're going to sell or add your photography to the limit.
That's our course next year, isn't it?
Yes.
We can actually do that. It's a very, it's not as complicated as you think. But first of all, before you get to that stage, you've got to start taking pictures. And you've got to move yourself up to a level that you can take an average picture. If you can take an average picture, the foreign markets are going to love you. You're going to double your chances of selling stories, both in North America and overseas, if you have include pictures in your package. Okay? Typical packages, foreign markets, range from about 300 to 800. That low number is way better than a lot of newspapers pay in North America. Okay? But remember, it's the full package. It's for photos and words. And that would be features of around 1,000 to 1,200 words. Okay? Not newspapers. That's a completely different market. I'm just talking about magazines here. Newspapers, that's a whole topic on itself. Never attach photos to your query. The same way you put up photos on your blog, there's a way to put up, and I'm sure Mary can help you with this, but what I do is I have a website and I have what's called a back page or hidden page. On that page, I would put up a sample of images called a lightbox, and I would give that link to the editor, and they're low res. The editor can look at it to see the photos I have. The photos are all have all a file name on them, so then he can order the high res, and then I can send them into high res later. No one has access to that page because it doesn't show up in the search engines or anything. It's on the back page or hidden page of my website. But you can do this with any website, and it's not that difficult to do. And what that allows you to do, if the person likes the idea that you've just submitted, they've clicked on your link, gone to your website, and they like your writing style, okay? There's only one thing left for them to check, and that's the photos. Because without the photos, you're probably not going to make the sale. So if you don't do it this way, by setting a background page up on your website and put a sample of images up to illustrate that story, then you're going to get an email back from the editor saying, can you send me a folder of low-res images for me to look at? And then you're going to have to put some low-res, and this gets back to what we were just talking about, low-res, high-res, and how you zip a folder so you can put it in an email and all of this. You can save yourself some trouble if you have any web savvy at all. If for those of you that do blogs and upload your own pictures to your blog, it's not a big step to be able to isolate a back page of your domain and put up light tables, light boxes. It's not that difficult. Yeah.
How about something like Dropbox?
Dropbox is perfect.
Yeah.
Dropbox is, I don't know how many of you know about it, but you can sign up for it, And they actually, you can put a folder of images in there and then just give the editor the link to that folder. So that's another way of doing it. Yes, very good. It's a great way of doing it.
What exactly is a light box?
A light box is an old term because when there was transparency slides, art directors used to have a flat box with a light in the back, and they put all the slides on it, and that's the way they could view them. They didn't put them in a slide projector. And it's just sort of not changed over the years. It's called a light table or a light box. It's just a terminology. It's just a like a contact sheet of images. Mention that you have the capability of providing a translated version if the guidelines request that you do a translation. Most of the magazines that I write for internationally will take English, and if they publish in another language, they do the translation. But there are some magazines that want the French magazines. They're very difficult to work with. They want the French version. So what I have done is you go to a community college and you put up one of those pieces of paper. You know the ones with your phone numbers that go down like that with those little slits?
That's real sick.
And you basically ask if there's anybody at the school that's French-speaking that would be willing to translate a 1,000-word story and give you a call. Because once the story is translated into French once, you don't need to do it again. And I've had to do that for German, French, and Spanish. And I think, you know, $50. But you have to know that it's a good enough story that you're going to make back that $50. So I use community college exchange. You can't be 100% sure. So what I have is I have a checker. I have a friend that lives in Montreal. She speaks fluent French, but like she's also a travel writer. So when I get the French translation done, I'll just email it to her and ask her if it's acceptable. She says, yeah. Don't worry. They know that the translation is coming from North America, and nobody speaks good French over here. So they know that they're going to have to redo it when it gets there. But they've got the gist of the story, okay? Oh, man. This is a killer. I get emails from writers where the sign-off information underneath the yours truly or sincerely or cheers is as long as the email itself. They list their 5 websites, their 10 awards that they've won, 16 books that they've lit. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on.
You're talking about the signature?
You know, what we have to realize is that in the international market, and even in the North American market, doesn't mean diddly squat to editors. The only thing that makes any sense to an editor, and that's important to an editor, is what you have between the words dear and the word regards. That's the important thing. Anything after regards, even your name, couldn't care less. Couldn't care less how many awards you won. Couldn't make it. Look, there's 10,000 awards in North America a year for writing. Everybody's won an award. Everybody can say they're award winning. So putting it down doesn't differentiate you in any way. So, you know, it just makes your email longer. You sign off with your name, your email address, your website, and a telephone number. That's it. My sign off is like 2 lines after my name. That's it. Don't put all of this other stuff there. It's just wasted time. Since all the foreign countries that I work for, they only want the rights to publish in their country. Okay, South Africa Adventures, just about South Africa, which means it's great because it's not like trying to, you get North America and they want the rights to the whole, to North America, to first rights in North America, then all of a sudden you're selling second rights in North America, whereas every country in the world is first rights. That story, Don't Step on the Iguana, sold 12 times, was always original because it was original to those countries, okay? Follow up after 3 weeks, and then if you don't hear anything, follow up again in a week. If you don't, send them another, pitch them again, okay? This business, somebody said, is about 10% travel, 10% writing, and 80% marketing. Probably a little light on the marketing. I would say it's almost 90%, okay, forget about that other percentage. It's 9.
So you're saying a different pitch.
Oh, yeah, different pitch.
Yeah.
You
can get that one.
Look, you want to get to that editor to the point where he says, damn it, I got to open this email to see what this guy's talking about, because he's already deleted your previous 5. So you just keep it. Just keep going, keep going. Even in North America, just keep going, keep going, keep going. I've sent editors 5, 6, 7 pitches before they bought one, and I've been working for them for the last 15 years since. So you, if as a salesperson, if somebody told you no and you gave up, you wouldn't be a very good salesperson, okay? So keep pitching. Now, we visit many destinations, and a lot of us just, we're just like this. We got a press trip to go on, and all we're looking at is that particular press trip. We go on that press trip, we just take notes or do whatever we want to do, we come back, then we write a story, we pitch it, we get it sold, it goes out to the thing, and we get the tear sheet back, we send the tear sheet to the host, and we go, that's over with. And we walk away. We don't go to a destination thinking about, I usually have 5 or 6 story ideas in my mind, outlined in my mind, before I go on a trip. And I do shot lists, photography lists, of the pictures I would need to illustrate those 5 stories. I might only have the 1 assignment to do a particular story, and that gets me to go to the destination. But before I go, I have other story ideas in mind, and I make shot lists, photography shot lists, to illustrate those stories, okay? So that when I come back, I write the story that I have, but I've got 4 other stories I can pitch to other magazines. The other thing is that when we visit a destination, we hardly ever think of that destination taking a Canadian story. So we all rush off to Hong Kong or Singapore. How many people in here have gone to Hong Kong? Okay. How many people thought that they could sell a Canadian travel story to a magazine in Hong Kong? I rest my case. But Hong Kong's a big market for Canada travel. Why? Stories about Canada sold in Hong Kong. There's a huge Chinese population, if you haven't noticed, in British Columbia. And a lot of them come from Hong Kong. And there's news, the piece on Kelowna, the wine in Kelowna. These are big stories for magazines abroad. We are a travel destination for the rest of the world, but when we travel to the rest of the world, we don't think that way. So we don't check out newsstands for the local magazine in that destination. And we don't check out, maybe spend some time with the PR person that's chaperoning us and ask them how the thing works in their particular country. You need to find that information out, because when you go back, you're going to pitch that Hong Kong magazine a story about Canada at the same time that you're pitching the Canadian magazine the story about Hong Kong. So you have to be fluid when you travel to foreign destinations. Not only that, if you go to Hong Kong, Hong Kong is a travel destination for Japan. So if you think you've got a market magazine in Japan, then you have to be thinking when you go to Hong Kong, before you go to Hong Kong, that there might be a story in Hong Kong that you can sell to your editor in today's traveler in Japan. Okay, so you have to be thinking worldly here, not BC or Canada or North America. If you do the shot list before you go, then you're going to get the photos. If not, what's going to happen? You're just going to concentrate on taking the photos for your specific story that you have an assignment for. Now, while you're there, you might find some other ideas, but then you come back and you have one of these other ideas, but you don't have any photos for it. Okay? And so you're back to square one again. And if the PR firm has just paid $10,000 to get you there, they're not going to pay you $10,000 to come back to write the other story. Okay? That's going to be tough to get them to foot another trip. So try and do 3, 4, I have as many as 5 ideas per trip. Okay, few of us, for whatever reason, don't seem to have enough time to properly prepare for a press trip. This is getting into that frame of mind that what you're going to look for when you get there, you're going to go to newsstands, you're going to have three or four ideas in your head of stories that could possibly work, plus whatever stories you find out about there. Few of us ever think of the destination we're visiting as a potential new market for our work. Few of us think that Hong Kong is going to take a story on the Kelowna wine trail. But they do. Okay? One of the things is, as the rest of the world starts rising above the rice paddies and gets disposable income, what's one of the first things that they do?
Travel.
That's why travel magazines are the fastest growing publications in third world countries, especially China. They've got like six English language publications and English language / Chinese publications on travel. National Geographic Chinese edition.
India
yes.
too.
Hmm?
India has
a India
huge,
too. So
huge English.
There is travel is on the increase and you need to keep your radar constantly moving. This is stuff that we've sort of regurgitated. I wanted to get to some of the other things. I've been preaching this gospel now for 20 years. I started off as a photographer, and when I realized that I had to wait on disorganized writers to query story ideas that were good enough for the editors to accept, and that I had images on to sell my images. I mean, I was waiting a long time. I'm sorry, I was waiting a long time. So I figured that the best way to do this was for me to write the story. But I didn't write, so I went back to school and learned how to write. And I wasn't that great at the beginning. I'm a lot better now, but I'm not going to win any Pulitzer Prize. And that's not what you need to do. If you've got average writing and average photography, that combines to be a much better package, entity, product to sell an editor than just a great story or great photography. So you got to stress this. And in North America, you can double your income, and you're in... And the other problem is that a lot of the CVBs, when you're publishing internationally, the CVBs don't have the images that you need, okay? So if you don't take the pictures, your story is going nowhere. So you've got to get into photography. Getting paid, I've got like five or six slides, it's going to be on the website. Getting paid internationally is no different than getting paid in North America, okay? There's different ways of doing it. Some pay. I would actually say that I've had less problems with collections internationally than I've had in North America. Okay? They're very businesslike, and if an editor uses your work and likes your work, they're not going to piss you off by not paying you because they want to have you back. Okay? Which brings us to another question, because people seem to think that once they've published one story in a magazine, they can move on and leave that magazine and never query it again. Okay, big mistake. Check is, I had a couple of markets that paid me by check. It's very tough because, first of all, it's in some weird currency. Secondly, you take it into the bank and they look at it, they don't know what to do with it. It takes like 2 months to clear, and then when it finally clears, and after all of the deductions and everything, you're left with like 50 cents. So the best thing to do is try and stay away from this, or try and work around negotiating to be paid either by a money order, which is cash. You can take it to the bank, and they'll put it in their bank account right away. Bank transfer, biggie. This is the way about 80% of my foreign magazines pay me. But it does mean that I have to give out my banking information to them. Now here's what I do. I open up a US bank account, okay? And nearly every Canadian bank, you can open up a US dollar account. You put $10 in it. That's all you need to do to keep it active. The bank will give you the SWIFT code and all of the blah, 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 blah things that you need to give to the accounting department at the magazine for them to wire your bank directly your funds. Soon as the funds come in, take them out in the US dollars and transfer them. I have another US account because I do a lot of travel in the US, so rather than constantly dealing with exchange rates, I have a second US account and I just transfer the money into that, and I use that money when I go down to the US. And just leave the $10. So if they penetrate the bank's firewall, they're gonna get $10. Okay?
What about using something like PayPal?
Well, what about using something like PayPal? How many people in here have a PayPal account? Everybody should have one. Good. I'm glad you do. Very easy. A few bucks you pay on the transfer. They transfer it. You get a notification in your email, and you got the money in your bank within a fraction of a time. Again, I set up a separate U.S. account for the PayPal. That's my most preferred way, because then I don't have to give out banking information.
Yeah.
But a lot of third world countries, they still aren't into this PayPal thing. So you have to be careful. I try and negotiate everything in Canadian dollars. I don't want to be paid in rubies or God knows whatever. I don't even want to be paid in Canadian dollars, because I had one thing in the paid me in pounds when the Canadian dollar was high, and if I'd have waited 2 weeks, I would have got an extra 50-something dollars on the... Pay me in U.S. dollars, and that's the way to go. Everything in U.S. dollars, open up a U.S. account. What if you don't get paid? Shit happens. Move on. Okay. How do you find these things? Okay, if you spent too much time in the airport bar or the duty-free shop and you didn't check the magazine racks, we have something called the internet today. Okay? It's an unbelievable tool for fun. I mean, you can go on Google and you can type in travel magazines Australia, and you'll get 10 magazines in Australia that do travel. It's as easy as that. These here are two sites that specifically have background information on publications in the world. I happen to use this. It costs money to belong to this website. It's about $25 a year. They've got 2,500 fairly updated listings, contact information, websites, information, and everything. It's a great website. I can highly recommend it. Again, when you travel outside of Canada, you just collect. I rip out the any airline I go on, they always know what seat I sat in, because I rip out the masthead and I rip out the map of all of the cities that they fly to.
Yeah.
So I'm always coming back with three. If I take five airlines between here and Dubai, I come back with those 15 pages, three of, you know, the double page of the map.
Just take the whole magazine.
I tried that, but then after a while, you know, 15, you're coming back, and you're heavy, they're thick. So just rip out the important stuff. Take a notepad. Anytime you pass anywhere that's got a magazine rack, in third world countries, they're on every corner. Every corner, because in third world countries, take a picture of the magazine cover. Open the magazine to the first page where... Take a picture. Whatever it takes. That's how you get all of this information. This will be on the website, and I've got a whole bunch of other web listings here for you to get started. But I hope I pumped you up enough that you can sort of get going. Now, is there any questions? Because we're probably over time. No? Well, we're good. Oh, yeah, we've got lots of time. 10 minutes, let's go. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so you don't put query. What about some of these magazines? You haven't pitched a magazine before. They say, email so-and-so for a sample magazine. So what do you put in the subject line?
I never do that.
No?
No, you don't want to get into that. That's so time-consuming. Nowadays, any magazine worth working for has got an online version. And you just go on the online version, you read the stories that are on there, you look at the pictures that are on there, and that will give you all of the information that you need. Just don't waste the time of yourself or your are the magazines. The other thing is that the magazines don't have money to send magazine, mail magazines out to freelancers. My God, they'd be mailing thousands of magazines a year at $3-4 a piece. They don't have the budget anymore, so you're not going to get it. So just go online.
And if you can't go online, go to the local library.
Yeah, and if you can't go online, go to the library. How many know about Bowker's, the Bowker's Directory for Publications?
Yes.
Okay, it's a big, thick book. It costs like $1,000 or something like that now. But you can go to your library in the reference section, and they have got periodicals, publications by country and by genre. So travel, health, whatever you want. And you can literally go into that, and Bowker's updates that directory every year. So there's another thing if you want to get into the sort of analog workflow, you can turn those pages. But you can get the same thing just by doing a little research on the web. Yep.
Sometimes I find it hard to get the emails for the podcast.
Very tough to get emails. I'll tell you what, I have Skype. Okay? How many of you have Skype? Okay. I can make a 2-minute call to just about anywhere in the world for less than $1 on Skype. Okay? Use it. The switchboard person will answer, because they'll have the phone number for the office. The switchboard person will answer. Chatter up a little bit, tell her where you're from, she'll get all excited, or he'll get all excited, and then you say, oh, by the way, do you use like the first person's name, period, and then the last person's name on emails? And they'll just say, yeah, that's the way we do it. And then you've got everything you need to send an email to the exact person.
Skype, credit. I give them $20 a year, and I talk to people all over the world using their landline.
Yeah.
They don't need to be
on
Skype for you to reach them.
Yeah, I have a program, what's it, $20-something dollars a year, and it's unlimited calls in North America, and I use that. Telus has not got 1 cent for me since Skype was installed in my computer. But it's beautiful, too, because you can call Great Britain for 2 cents or 3 cents
a minute.
So it's like, you know, you put $5 on your credit on the Skype, and you can call South Africa for 6 cents a minute. You can call India for 2 cents a minute. So if you get the magazine's phone number, just call them. Make sure you've got the timing right, because there might not be anybody there.
Yeah, just a little tip. For an iPad app, I have used Talkatone, and you can dial anywhere in North America for free.
There you go. The key
Talkatone.
The more information you can get on exactly who to, the person's name to send an email to, you're exponentially increasing your chances of selling something. Okay? Yep.
Inspiring.
Talk.
Let me show you something. I'll show you this website, and I'm not a salesperson for this website. I don't get any commission, but I'll just give you a quick. I'll just show you something really quick, because I think you'll see what I mean. It was here. Oh, now. This is the world. I don't even know the name of it.
Worldwide Freelance.
Worldwide Freelance. Thank you. God, I'm so dumb. My brain is not working. If I don't write everything down, it's gone.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. This is once you get inside past the your login information. This is what you get. So if I went down here and I went to travel topics, market topics, and I just select travel, you will see that I've got 32 pages. And on each page is 10 magazines. So that's 320 magazines just listed on this shelf, on this site. So let's go to Action Asia. I contribute to this publication, and I actually found them on this website. What it does is that it pulls up the information. You get a nice little idea of the magazine. It usually has the cover. It gives you a little spiel on the thing here. Down here at the bottom, it says that they pay $400 for a four-page smaller features, and $800 to $1,000 US for main features of 10 to 14. It gives you the website. It gives you the guidelines. If you click on the guidelines, it's not the computer. It's the Wi-Fi. It's very slow.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so there's the editorial guidelines. Thanks for your interest, Dave. Blah, 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 blah. Low-res pics to blah, blah, blah. Editor-in-chief is Steve White. Okay, so he's asking you, theoretically, to send it to him, but it's at AA. So it's that general web email address, but at least he's giving you his name and he's telling you to send it to him, okay?
So you send it to him and put attention?
No, I would just say
AA?
No. You just you. It's email to AA at whatever
yeah.
that is, and then it's dear. Oh, and how many people? You know, this is another thing. This is a professional business that we're in here. Though sometimes I wonder. Hi, hello,
oh,
hello Mike, dear. Hello Steve. You don't know the guy from Adam, and you're helloing and hi, dear Mr. White. Okay? If he answers back your email with Steve, then please feel free to say hello Steve or dear Steve on your next email. But try and keep it businesslike. The rest of the world is very businesslike.
Greetings.
If you just say hi Steve, hello Steve on a query email for the first time.
Dear sounds so good.
So what do you do with a female editor? Is it Ms., Mrs., Miss? Or
Ms.,
MS.
Always MS. Dear Ms. Whatever. Sometimes you don't know. You get some Chinese names there. I couldn't tell you whether what is the first name, what is the last name. Are they male? Are they female? Because they're using their Chinese name, not their
sir, madam.
They're not using like Alice or Betty. You know, Betty Zhang. They're using something else. So just the way it's written out, just say dear and you just put all of that and wait for them to answer you back and then you'll know. This site is worth it. There's another thing that this site offers too. It offers, let me go to home.
Where is it from? Where
is it? It's somebody in the US, but I found it that it's a very good resource.
The one you paid for.
Yeah, it's $24 a year, and then they've got a whole bunch of other stuff here too. And I'll just go to the store and show you. The store, they have very specialized things. Like this is the 2011. He'll probably come out with the 2012 pretty soon. But you could get like 50 travel writing markets for $6.95. But the one that I like is this one right here.
Oh, yes.
Okay? This sucker here, and it's usually up to date, gives you 107 countries, 193 airlines, 212 publications, and it gives you all of this information. Okay? That cost $17. So if you go to this site and pay the annual fee for $24 and buy this for $17, I can guarantee you it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. You know what? But
okay.
You know, maybe we should be doing some of these things cumulatively, and we could, as a benefit of joining.
Oh.
I think, though, that you might run into some problem with copyright if you try to put one of these market lists on a website and then for further distribution. Yeah, I mean, it would be something that maybe the president or director of the organization can approach this chap. I have his name. And maybe they can work out a special deal if we order 50
yeah.
or 100. They can maybe give a special deal to us. Yeah, that could work.
Good idea.
So, that's it.
Contradicted
and next year we can
a handful of things I've heard in the past.
Videography.
Sorry? And videography.
Yes.
That's another one. That's two.
That's
next 2 years
only
covered.
Contradicted
right?
A few things I've heard in